The Octavo Singers of Schenectady is an 80-year-old community chorus of about 100 singers. They generally perform large sacred works and present their concerts almost exclusively in big urban churches and synagogues. For their 2016 spring concert, they'll perform Haydn's The Seasons on Saturday, May 14th at 7:30 p.m. at the First Reformed Church of Schenectady. The Octavo Singers artistic director and conductor Curtis Funk joins us this morning, and we're delighted to have him here, and it's great to see you again. Thank you very much.
Oh, thanks for having me, Joe. It's great to be here again.
So what have you all been up to?
Well, we've had another fun season. We did a concert in the fall, and it was a concert of all Schubert music. And it was fun. We did the two masses of Schubert out of his six. But we also rolled out a beautiful octet of his, which doesn't get performed very often because you have to have eight really strong instrumentalists. And I was particularly interested to do it because, you know, when people come to an Octavos concert, they're coming to hear a choral concert. But there's a percentage of them there that you know, want to hear instrumental music as well. And even though the choral pieces have instrumental accompaniment, it was kind of fun to roll out a strictly orchestral piece. And the piece takes about a half an hour. So that was a lot of fun. It was kind of a first for us.
Yeah.
And then we did our traditional Messiah in December at Union College and you know, drew our usual crowd. And then, as you said, this Saturday coming up, we've got a concert in the Stockade, and we're doing Franz Joseph Haydn's last big oratorio. In fact, it was the last big piece he composed before he started kind of backing off and kind of, you know, fading from the composition scene. And then ultimately, you know, 8 years later, he died. So, you know, this is sort of his oratorio swan song. It's going to be a lot of fun to put it on.
Have you ever done it?
I've done portions of it with other groups. This is the first time that I've done it with our group, and I believe it's the first time the group's done it since 1948.
Wow.
So, yeah, and back then we actually found a poster for it. Back then it was $1.50 to get in. And the other thing that was interesting is it's a long piece. It's about, you know, with intermission, opening remarks, and that type of thing. It's going to go about 2.5 hours. And back in 48, they started that concert at 8 o'clock. And, you know,
late night.
Yeah, the board would show me the door if I tried to do that now. You know, they want my people heading toward the parking lot around 10 o'clock generally.
Right. So 7:30 is a safe time.
Yep.
Is it for you and for the musicians, and for the chorus, is it draining to do something like that for, I mean, you were talking about a piece that was a half hour long. Because it's so big, because it's so austere, does that drain you a little bit more than other works?
You know, I would think so. Just minute for minute, it would. I mean, as a conductor, you know, I'm standing the whole time, waving my arms.
Yep.
And also, it's just the psychic energy. I mean, this piece is 41 movements long. So when I get to, like, movement 13, which is a pretty big investment, I'm only a third of the way through.
Right.
And, you know, I've got another 28 to go. And so, yeah, I think it does take it out of them. The thing that kind of deflects from that is it's so much fun. It's just a wonderful piece of music. We're doing it in its native German, and it's a piece about the four seasons, so it's not a particularly religious piece. I mean, there are a couple of choruses that break off and are, you know, thank God for the bountiful earth and that type of thing, but it's a much more secular piece than we normally do, so there's kind of a charge in that.
What goes into the decision, or is it even a decision that you say, okay, we're going to do it in the native German?
In this particular one, the decision was kind of made for me because the English translations are horrible. And in fact, even Haydn attested to the fact that the English translation was horrible. It started out, the text started out as an English poem, and then Haydn's librettist translated it into German, and then took his German and then tried to translate it back into English. And his translation and the original English poem were so disparate that Haydn just said, you know, I'll include the English because I know there are choirs, you know, down the road that are going to want to do it in English. He goes, but I don't like it at all.
Mm.
So, and I looked it over, and he's right. When he said it to music, the accents fall much more naturally to German inflection than they do English inflection.
Do you find that is often the case in translated works, that it is a safer bet to go with the original in the language of which it was intended?
Generally. I mean, the composer is composing it with those words in mind, and what happens is when you decide to pop it into English or any other language, you're going to end up with the word syllable, you know, instead of syllable, because of the way the accentuation of the notes falls on the measure.
So for the singers, I mean, you just said you found a poster for what was the year that it was
1948.
So that tells you how long, 180 years. This group's been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think accounts for that, and just the overall need for both the singers and for the community to have this type of organization and choral group?
Yeah, I think the fact that the group's been around this long really attests to the fact that we're filling a niche. You know, originally in '33 when we were formed with WPA funds, and those funds disappeared in a year.
Yeah.
And you know, had this not
thank God that doesn't happen now.
Yeah, <right. laughs>
Thank God that government money lasts a lot longer.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
got over that.
Yeah, those appropriations just keep coming and coming, don't they? Yeah, you know, if it had not been filling some sort of need, I think it would have gone away when the money went away. But the group stuck around and just grew and grew and grew. I mean, we haven't figured out why we're even called the Octavos, but we think we're called that because there's a specific type of music called octavo. It's like generally sheet music,
mm-hmm.
and we think that's what they started singing. And then somehow that kind of morphed into these longer works that we did, and at the same time, concomitantly, the size of the group grew. And I think this area with 13 colleges all within an hour of each other just kind of needs this kind of performing ensemble around, not only to listen to, but also to join. We're one of the few volunteer non-auditioning groups that somebody who's got a little bit of training and a lot of love for music can gravitate to.
And I think from our previous conversations, you really run the gamut as far as age and experience, don't you?
Yeah, you know, demographically, I'm guessing I would say the median age is probably in the early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got, out of our 100, we've got probably 10 or 12 people under 30. And we've got some people in their 70s and their 80s. And interestingly, that's how our audience is painted as well. You know, when I get up there for my opening remarks and look around, I see that same spectrum of age.
Does it also depend on the work, or is the audience your audience in most cases?
That's a really good question. I would say it does depend a little bit on the piece. For instance, we do a Messiah every December,
yeah.
and that's a sellout. We get
sure.
we get 500 or 600 at that, and it's because it's Messiah. It's not because it's December. And it's not because parking's good at Union College. It's because it's, you know, Messiah.
It doesn't hurt, good parking,
right.
But yeah, sure.
But the fall and the spring concert, you know, we hover around 250 to 300. And I've seen dips when it's pieces that aren't particularly well known. We did this beautiful piece. It's a Stabat Mater by Carl Jenkins. Gorgeous piece of music. But Carl Jenkins isn't particularly well known. He's a living Welsh composer. As opposed to, like, you know, a dead European guy, which is, you know, what a lot of the classic music is. And we saw, a dip in the audience because of that. So I think you're right. I think there is a draw when you see, like, Mozart or Beethoven or Brahms on the posters. I think there's probably going to be a greater likelihood that you're going to come to that than maybe a composer who's still alive that you haven't heard of.
But you also get the core audience and the people that follow you just because you are who you are.
Yep, absolutely. I would say, you know, of that 250, 300, probably 150 to 200 are the same faces. And
yeah.
it's the friends and the family of, the actual members. Plus, it's, you know, we're a pretty consistent performing group. You know, we don't put on a bad concert. So people know when they buy an octavo ticket, they're not going to go to something where there's a possibility that the group may have to stop or the group's going to be wickedly out of tune or out of balance with the orchestra or anything like that.
You answered this question, but I'm going to ask it again, sure. which is, you know, talking about the niche that you fill, as you said, you fill a niche. Talk a little bit about that niche and how you think you fit into the overall because we have wonderful groups and wonderful organizations, arts organizations within this community of what niche you fill within that structure.
Yep. You know, as I say, you know, we're in an area where there's like a dozen or 13 colleges all within, you know, cat swing distance of each other.
Right.
And I think that a lot of people graduate and stick around, and that creates an audience that has sort of an expectation of decent music and music that, you know, they probably heard in a humanities class or maybe even a music appreciation class. That niche also is what ends up joining the group. So I think our group's existence is important not only from an audience standpoint, but also from a something to join standpoint. Mm. And I think, you know, if be real honest, if we were out somewhere in the Midwest where there wasn't a, you know, a great collegiate nexus, and you know, it was, you know, maybe just like a rural area or something like that, I don't know that we would be necessarily successful. You know, again, friends and neighbors would come, but I don't think you'd have this sort of demand for a cultural venue that you have here in the Capital District.
Let's talk, as we wrap up our conversation, let's talk about the space, because as I mentioned in the introduction, you perform in these large, beautiful churches and synagogues. You look for a big space.
Yeah. Some of that's by necessity. I mean, there's 100 of us.
Right.
And again, because the average person's in their 60s, it's got to be 100 seated people. You know, we can't do a 2.5-hour auditorium and stand up.
Right.
So seating 100 people takes a lot of space. Plus, we have a, you know, 20-member chamber orchestra. And so we have to have not only a chancel that'll hold the singers, but we also have to have a nave that'll, you know, hold the 20 instrumentalists. So size alone sometimes dictates where we go. But the other thing is, you know, because of the music we do, which is, with the exception of this weekend, which is secular, you know, we generally do a sacred piece. And so to have it in a large church with all that beautiful statuary and the marble and that type of thing just adds to the concert, because you get that visual effect as well as the oral.
I mean, we were just talking before the break for the folks from MPAC, and that whole design of how we hear things, and but that's part of it too. I mean, that's what this music was designed for, that type of space.
Oh, exactly.
And for it to rattle around and all of that that beautiful marble and
oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think Bach and clearly Bach and Mozart and Haydn to another degree wrote for a vaulted ceiling. The lines that they sing and whatnot are meant to blend and kind of coalesce, and you know, what better place to do that than a place with a vaulted ceiling and not a whole lot of absorption in terms of carpeting and padded pews and that type of thing. The downside is they aren't padded pews, so you're going to be sitting in a hard wooden pew for 2.5 hours. So dress accordingly.
Or bring a pillow.
Exactly.
That's right. The Octavo Singers 2016 Spring Concert will take place on Saturday, May 14th. So that's this Saturday.
That's right.
This Saturday at 7:30 at the First Reformed Church of Schenectady. For more information, you can visit octavosingers.com. That's octavosingers.com. Octavo Singers. Octavo. I'm having problems with this, Curtis. Octavosingers.com or wamc.org/roundtable. I wish you all the best. It's always good to see you. Thank you very much, and we look forward to having you come in and talk about the next great event.
Oh, I love being here, Joe. Thanks so much for the invitation.
Again, the Octavo Singers 2016 Spring Concert takes place this Saturday at 7:30, and you can find out more by going to octavosingers.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.